Thank you. Now, you don't want tears already, so. But, Jack, thank you very, very much for that that introduction. And what an enormous pleasure and privilege it is for Ruth Ann and myself to be here today. As Jack alluded to, we were married right here in this church 29 years ago, this past April 10th. And it is a real privilege to see Pastor Allen and his wife and Pastor Hovland and his wife. And indeed, it did take Otis Davidson as well. We had waited so long, I think, to get married. And I'm not sure, but I think the three pastors divvied up the responsibilities in terms of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And I don't know which one of you picked what, but something must have worked. And it's just such a privilege and delight to see you all here today. And it's a privilege to see so many familiar faces as well. As Jack touched on, I was the budding broadcaster at that point. I was just doing a weekly newscast for CFRB, and Ruth was the chanteuse, the daughter of Gord and Lenore Wallace. And I really don't know what's harder to believe, that I'm returning now here today as Lieutenant Governor, or that she said yes when I proposed. But either way, it's a delight. It's remarkable to me, as Lieutenant Governor, and just as someone who has attended this church over the years with Ruth, that the 175 years of First Baptist effectively encompasses most of Ontario's history. Think about that for a moment. Those founding members of 1836 must certainly have included veterans of the War of 1812. And next year, we'll be celebrating the bicentennial of 1812. Some of those members, quite possibly, had met or certainly knew of the first Lieutenant Governor, John Graves Simcoe. And, of course, we know why this town is named Simcoe. Few churches, truly, in not just this area, not just Ontario, but in Canada, can claim 175 years of continuing service to the Lord. And the question, I guess, is why? In this time of short-term marriages, business arrangements, and where things are very trendy and then thrown away, how does something last 175 years and successfully so? And for some people, it might be a mystery as to why that is the case. And some mysteries, of course, are more easily solved than others. Now, I don't know about you, but I love the Murdoch mysteries. If I can't watch it when it is live and I see a lot of heads nodding up and down, I'll record it and watch it later. And I've never yet been able to figure out the plot, and that's probably why I enjoy it. I can't pick out the bad guy. But some are more difficult than others. And an example of this involves a young boy at a church one Sunday morning. And the pastor noticed him staring up at the war memorial in the foyer with all the names of the church's veterans, some with crosses after their name. And the 7-year-old had been staring at this plaque so intently that when he saw the pastor, he said to the pastor and asked him what the plaque was all about. And the pastor thought for a moment and realized that he really deserved a very serious answer. And he said, "Well, son, it's a memorial to all the young men who died in the service." And the boy just stood there silently, really saying nothing for several seconds, and then in a barely audible voice turned to the minister and asked, "Which service, the 9:30 or the 11:15? Now, I'm sure our reaction was the same reaction the pastor had, because for that young boy, the plaque and the words on it were truly a mystery. And the pastor's answer only deepened the mystery for him. And we smile at the story because we know it's probably true. It probably happened somewhere along the way. And that also, within minutes, the truth would be revealed by the pastor and explained to him so that even a child, literally even a child, could understand. But First Baptist success is no mystery. While good times have come and gone, no doubt, and while difficulties have arisen and retreated, and literally through war and peace, through many, many births and many, many deaths, while marriages as well. Pastors have come and gone. First Baptist has remained true to the faith, true to its community and to the proclamation of the gospel. And in so doing, I believe it has been blessed. As times have demanded change, the church has responded. The new wing, and I say that in relative terms, the relatively new wing of the church, for instance, opened in 1989, made the church far more accessible, not just for the random visitor, but also for the lieutenant governor. This is very important, as accessibility is one of the great challenges facing our society in general, and accessibility in the church is a particular responsibility. I think our understanding of the issue of accessibility in its broadest terminology is crucial if we are to remain relevant into the 21st century. And like the boy who did not understand the meaning or the context of the word service, understanding key words in the area of accessibility is key to our knowledge. One of the most eloquent Christian statements on this was published in April 2010 by a group called the Standing Conference of Orthodox Bishops in America. It's a long title to say the Russian Orthodox Church. Now, I don't typically quote in speeches from the Russian Orthodox Church. However, in this essay, which you can find online just under the term SCOBA, S-C-O-B-A, and maybe add in the word accessibility or disability, you will find a 2,000-word online essay. It's entitled Disability and Communion, Embracing People with Disabilities Within the Church. And in this context, of course, communion is not the sacrament, but the greater sense of the word. Here's their introduction. They say, disability affects people of all backgrounds, nations and races, of both genders and any age. A disability stems from an impairment that is either congenital or the result of disease, injury, or the developmental and aging process. Disability is a daily and in many ways a natural occurrence. We are all touched by disability in a form of illness or injury or difficulty at some point in our lives. Since we all hold the treasure of God's life in fragile earthen vessels, each of us is vulnerable to disability, whether by circumstance, by genes, by disease, by accident, or by age. Now, in all the years that I've been studying this topic, I find this to be the most accurate and embracing description of the word disability. There's really not much more to be added, except really kind of the punchline or the additional follow-through meaning, and that is, we are all disabled or eventually could be. Now, I mentioned earlier that I liked the Murdoch mysteries because I like the surprise twists. And as someone who's once written a novel, that was the big trick in the preparation of my novel, was to have a couple of surprises that the reader could not possibly have anticipated. And that's what I really like about this SCOBA report. Because just as in a good novel or a TV mystery where they take you down a pathway of thought and then suddenly spring something on you that you weren't expecting, that's exactly what happens in the SCOBA definition of disability. Because just as they have you nodding your head in approval, they present us with a dilemma. And it may even be convicting for some people, probably not people in this church, but for others outside, it may be convicting because it goes to the very heart of the actual definitions we use to describe those people who have disabilities. And here's their quote. Yet a person with a disability is not necessarily handicapped except through the physical and attitudinal barriers created by other people. Wow, what insight. Handicaps are, in fact, the barriers that other people create for people with disabilities by excluding them socially and even physically. Now, the significance of this here cannot be overstated. A person can be disabled and overcome their disability triumphantly, but they may be handicapped and stopped because of an attitude imposed by other people. Physical barriers handicap people. Attitudes handicap people, either deliberately or by neglect. And the authors do not allow the church, in the broadest sense, to escape unscathed, saying it has, quote, not reached out sufficiently to adults and children with disabilities in its ministry. Indeed, the reality of disability is often shrouded in silence or shame because the presence of disability challenges basic assumptions and stereotypes. To this, they then encourage us all to remember that God shows no partiality. And they quote scripture further, saying, for the Lord does not see as we see. We see the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Now, there's another challenging notion. Just when you think you've absorbed as much as you can absorb in the first 1,000 words, there's another very challenging, and I say even exciting, notion. And it deals with another word, and that is the word inclusion. We hear it all the time. And it's a word that has slipped into the common parlance when it applies to accessibility, and there's nothing wrong with it in the specific definition. However, the authors remind us of a very significant reality, and that is inclusion is something that is forced by mandate, by rules, by regulations, sometimes even orders and counsel signed by the lieutenant governor. The authors say we need to look at something different, and that is membership. And membership, as we see here this morning and have seen, implies support. The authors say that, and I didn't know this until I read it, that the application of the word membership as it applies to persons is of profoundly Christian origin, and it is only in the church that it assumes full and authentic meaning. St. Paul implies that the members of the church resemble organs of a body, essentially different from, yet essentially complementary to one another. Membership differs from mere inclusion in the collective or political sense. We are not a full community without one another. If we exclude or overlook one member, then we do not simply reduce the community. We, in fact, inflict injury on the very structure of the church. What a challenge, and what an opportunity. We have to ask ourselves, are we inadvertently handicapping people with our attitudes? Do we cling to stereotypes? Do we practice inclusion but find membership difficult? Well, these are all issues that society has to consider seriously if true accessibility is ever truly to be achieved. Now, I think we must lead by example. And I would point to the actions of Queen Elizabeth at the very beginning of her reign as monarch. In a simple but profound gesture, she insisted that disabled people, usually in wheelchairs or crutches, be placed in the front row for her visits and public ceremonies. Nobody had ever done this before. In this, Her Majesty, just back in 1953, after the coronation, was challenging society's assumptions and the value about those people, that is, disabled people, who had rarely been seen in public and never seen in public with their monarch. Yet, here they were, in the preferred seating, as it were. Those who had been last were now first, at least in their monarch's eyes. I truly believe, she meant people to know this. I think it's a part of Her Majesty's deep faith. She was very aware of the symbolism of the first and the last. And in fact, I had the opportunity to find that this was actually true, because His Royal Highness, the Prince Edward, visited Toronto 3 years ago. And we had the opportunity of meeting with him and for a period of time conversing with him, first in a reception room and then over a delightful luncheon at the Royal York Hotel. And I took that opportunity to ask him about his mother, the Queen, and this process of having people with disabilities in the front row. And he recalled at that very point and got into a very animated description how as a young boy, he was quite aware of seeing people in the front row in wheelchairs, and he asked his mother why she did this. And the queen told him, "So that everyone can see disabled people are equal too." Wow. So, the challenge today, and there's always a challenge, isn't there, Pastor, in a good message? The challenge is today is that we all search our hearts and our minds on how we might put those with disabilities in the front row of our lives, both spiritually and perhaps even sometimes physically. We can do no other, as truly anything we do for one of my brothers and sisters, however insignificant, we do it for him. In this, we can be a model for society, a model for disabled people, and for all people living out our beliefs in all that we say and we do. And so as the Queen's representative in Ontario, it is my privilege to be here. It is my privilege to commend you, the members of the congregation of First Baptist Church, on 175 years of compassion, inclusion, and care for your community. May God continue to bless First Baptist Church and all who call it home.